Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Thursday, October the 10th, day number 283 of 2013. Today, we're going to be chatting with a couple of our friends, Mandy Nagy, who is a contributor to Legal Insurrection. I think you're going to enjoy her comments a great deal. She's been on the show one other time. And our good friend, Frank Burke, also a contributor to The American Thinker, as well as a businessman, up in Wisconsin. Of course, Frank is an old friend of our show. We've had him on our show many times. And we're going to be looking at these Obamacare computer problems from the perspective of a couple of people who've been in the business world. Frank, as a manager, as someone who has done consulting with companies, and Mandy, who has actually had a lot of experience on the technology side of things. So we're going to look at this as a computer problem as well as a managerial problem, because I really think it's both. I really think it's both. I think we're seeing here not just a breakdown in the computers, but we're breakdown in the managerial style, if you will, of President Obama. So we're going to be talking to Mandy and with Frank in a minute about all of these computer problems and all of the stuff going on. And hopefully we will know by the end of the show why the computers don't work. Don't bet on that, but we're going to give it our best shot. My book, Cubanos in Wisconsin, you can get the book print or Kindle at Amazon. If you have an account with Amazon, you can just order the book directly from them, or you can go to our website, CubanosInWisconsin.com, and you can order the book from us. And if you do that, we have a special feature on our website where you can have the book dedicated to you or to a friend or an old Cuban teacher. Maybe when you went to high school, you had an old Cuban teacher that you remember. Well, you can do that. You can just order the book and have me dedicate the book to them, and we'll be more than happy to do that. I mentioned in the introduction of Frank that he's up in Wisconsin. Well, on this day in history, 1957, the Milwaukee Braves beat the Yankees for the World Series. It was the only time that the Milwaukee Braves, of course, they're not there anymore. They're in Atlanta now. But the Milwaukee Braves in 1957 won the World Series on this day back many, many years ago. And also, now this one makes me feel old because I remember this one. I remember this one quite well. 1973, on this day, Vice President Spiro Agnew resigned the vice presidency, and well, we know the rest of the story. About a year later, President Nixon resigned. But the only good thing that came out of the Agnew resignation is that a very good man by the name of Gerald Ford eventually ended up in the presidency. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back with Mandy and Frank right after this. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and when I said Mandy and Frank, guys, I thought I was watching the movie Grease. those are a couple of names for some reason. They reminded me of the movie Grease. Let's say hello to Mandy. How are you, Mandy?
I'm great. How are you?
Absolutely wonderful. And let's say hello to Frank.
Hi, Silvio. How are you doing?
It's a great honor to have both of you tonight. As we like to do, we like to have our guests tell us a little bit about themselves. So, Mandy, you go first.
Sure. Well, I write at Legal Insurrection, and I do a tech column over at the Breitbart website at The Conversation. And before I got into blogging, I spent quite a few years working in technology, mainly doing law firm technology and legal research. So I have some background there that might apply tonight.
Yes, I know you do. I'm anxious to hear your thoughts tonight. And Frank, please tell us about yourself.
Sure. Most of my career has been spent in marketing and communications. I work with a number of industrial firms and consumer firms, actually some institutions as well, and have thoroughly enjoyed it. I do a lot of writing, have written on technology for magazines and for corporations and white papers, etc. So I've had a very varied experience in marketing.
Right, and you're also a contributor to American Thinker, which is how we first met. A couple of years ago, when you published an article at American Thinker called "Barack Obama Management Appraisal," and you looked at Barack Obama as a manager, and I've always thought that there's a great article that you wrote, and it's so relevant to what we're watching today. Well, you know, I don't know that much about computers, Mandy. You probably know a heck of a lot more than I do, but how does something like this happen? I mean, how does a computer built by some of the supposedly very smart people, I'm assuming they are very smart, I mean, they have other websites. You can go to the IRS website. That works. You can go to, I don't know, the Immigration and Naturalization website. That works. So what happened here? Well, I'm just curious. Let's begin with that, Mandy.
Well, I think a lot of it really comes down to it's not just the technical issues. I mean, the technical issues obviously are a problem in themselves, and a lot of that, you know, is connected to the way that things were coded. But I think a lot of it actually comes down to the planning involved. And, you know, I think if you look at the law itself, the law itself, the way it was written, there were a lot of holes in it, and, you know, as we remember Nancy Pelosi saying, we have to pass the bill so you can find out what's in it. I think, you know, a lot of the planning seems to have sort of gone the same way. There have been reports out about certain things that are standard course of procedure in technology projects that just didn't seem to really happen in this instance. Some of that goes to testing. Some of it goes to documentation that wasn't done before the launch. So it seems to me that a lot of it has just been bad planning.
Interesting. Well, anytime I hear bad planning, Frank, I think management.
Right.
Yes, indeed.
Because, I mean, you know, it's the two things are related. And I sent Mandy a copy of your article, so I don't know if she had a chance to see it.
Yes, I did.
Yeah. But one of the things that I loved about Frank's article and when I was hearing about this thing not being tested and all these problems, I kept thinking, Frank, of your first description of Obama as a manager who doesn't want to get involved and doesn't want to, you know, get into anything. And that's the impression I have here, that in many ways he didn't want to get involved. He let other people worry about everything. Well, you can do that to a point. But when you're the guy in charge, you have got to be in charge, and the people that work for you have to know you're in charge. I don't get the feeling that happened here, Frank.
Well, it certainly didn't, and I think you can see it, Silvio, in the way in which he has reportedly turned over to Harry Reid virtually all of the negotiation having to do with the national debt and the government shutdown. And the one you're hearing quoted again and again is Harry Reid. And there's no leadership from Obama. But I'd like to take it a step further because, you know, being a business person, one of the things you have to learn is to take a look at the big picture. And the big picture is this. There's been over, what, $500 million spent on this so-called website, and it doesn't work. And some of the reasons are, as I think Mandy can attest and seems to have already hinted at, they're very basic. There was no beta site. There was no testing. If you were going to do something this big, you would typically not do it with one website. You might start, you might break it down by area of the country and say, by time zone, if you will, in the east, this is the number, et cetera, so that you didn't have to deal with this gigantic flood. But step back a minute and take a look at it. I don't think this was ever intended to work. One of the great disappointments I've had in the last 2 weeks is a columnist that I generally respect, Daniel Henninger, made the comment, well, let's let Obamacare fail, and then, you know, it will go away. I don't think so. I think that what has always been wanted, and what you've heard some of these people like Harry Reid slip and say, is the single-payer system. It is socialized medicine complete. And the way you get to that is you fail with Obamacare. And then it becomes, oh, my gosh, you know, we can't disappoint all these people. It's so unfortunate it failed like this. Now we've got to save it, and we've got to introduce single-payer system. So I don't think they have really tried. There's enough expertise out there to do this the right way. So if it's so abysmally done, and this isn't just a couple of glitches, there's got to be a reason for it. And I personally think that's the reason.
So you think this was all by design. Now, a lot of, you know, sometimes I feel the same way. But I have to confess that when, I don't like the law, neither, I'm sure the two of you don't like it either. But what I was afraid of was that the law would, you know, the enrollment would start, that it would all be so smooth. You know, I figured, look at the way they ran their campaign. They were pretty good at that. And I thought, okay, they'll put this out there. It'll work beautifully. People will sign up, and then it's tougher to repeal it. But they didn't do that, and it just amazes me. They didn't do any testing, Mandy. They didn't do any pilot programs. I mean, that's pretty incredible. I mean, that's like... you know, if you submitted a paper like that, the teacher would probably give you an F.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think testing is one of the largest components. There were some quotes out there about, I don't remember what the numbers were, but they speculated on, you know, what the amount of load to test for should be. They said, you know, this is about how many users we think would be on the system at a time. And, you know, there's a standard calculation for that. You typically, when you do what's called load testing, you multiply that by a certain amount. So in a case like this, it might be like times 10, times 8, or times 10. And whatever the number they came up with as the base number was abysmally low. And it doesn't match the claims that the administration has made since then after the rollout, where Obama has said, you know, the demand on the website has been so great. So many people want this so badly. They're all on the site signing up for health care. And if that were the case, they would have worked that into the plans. So I don't really buy the claim that this is all volume. I thought from the start that it was a lack in the amount of testing that they did, and also a lot of the coding issues. And the coding issues are tied to the load testing. So while it's not all volume, it all has to do as well with what they anticipated as far as how many people would be on the site at a time. And the, like I said before, the planning in that was just woefully inadequate. And I do think that there may be some truth to the fact that, there's a fear that people's response to this is going to be, well, this has failed so badly, let's just go to single payer, because they think that'll be the answer. And I do think that is one of the outcomes that could happen from the way that this is rolled out.
Right. Well, especially if they have all of these, you know, thousands of people who signed up and couldn't, you know, who tried to sign up and couldn't sign up, then they're all sitting out there waiting for the government to take care of them. But I'm just curious. You know, I have not been involved, like both of you have been involved, in projects where you put out a new product or something. I have never really been involved in anything that substantial. But it seems to me that if you're going to do something like this, this is the biggest non-military project that the United States government has ever done. I mean, this is incredibly big. You're talking about a sizable chunk of the economy. You would think that they would have taken this, Frank, and they would have said, okay, let's try it out. Let's take three or four states and test it and try it out for about 6 months. And if nothing else, it'll show us how it works. Let's put aside your idea that they were making it to fail, but just as as a managerial business matter, wouldn't you do that? Wouldn't you try it in different states, Frank?
Of course. You'd have what are called beta sites, which are test sites, and on the basis of that, you would use a simulation to kind of determine what was going to happen next. And if problems occurred in the beta sites, you would then say, okay, this is what we've got to fix. You know, it's but, you know, let's take a look at one other thing, too, and that is how fallacious the whole concept is. Because, Silvio, you've bought insurance, and, you know,
sure.
I've bought insurance. Yeah. So what happens when you buy insurance? First of all, if you are of our age or even younger, you'll have to have a physical examination so that they know what they're dealing with, so that they can determine if you have certain conditions. If you go into a doctor's office, even with a Medicare card, you have to fill out forms about the kinds of problems you may have had. And then the doctor can verify it. If you say you have bronchitis, he can say, well, come on over here, let me put this stethoscope on your lungs and we'll see if they're clear. Whatever. But there's none of that. You cannot possibly do this with any validity without any kind of examination. You're asking people to buy insurance without knowing what conditions they have, without knowing what the deal is. So that just can't be done. It can't be done
right.
Sensibly.
Well, the other thing, too, and I was listening to, you know, Governor Mike Huckabee has the radio show. And this afternoon, I just happened to be listening to him for a few minutes. And somebody called in and was talking about the expectations of that, you know, somebody who would try to enroll said that many of the people that he had talked to would try to enroll thought the whole thing was free. That,
mm-hmm.
you know, this is a free program. That you were just signing up, you know, like you're signing up for whatever. But it was all free. That a large chunk of the population in this early wave of signing up are people, apparently, who think that this is free. So they're sitting there signing up, many of them, I don't know what kind of computer literacy they have. So, it, you know, maybe that's part of the problem, too, that nobody really understands what this program is all about. But let me move to a different topic related to this, of course, but that is the cost of Obamacare, of the website. I had seen a report that it was $634 million. That was the cost of the website, but Mandy, you have some new information on this that I was not aware of, so please share that with us.
Yeah, sure. I had seen that report earlier, too, so I took a look at the source that particular article was citing, and it was one of the USA Spending websites that shows the federal contract spending. And the thing is, when you actually look at that, you can see that it's giving figures for all of the projects that have been awarded one of those particular contractors. The website was actually built by a handful of contractors, and one of the main ones that built the back end is a federal contractor by the name of CGI Federal. They've actually been around a long time and have had many government contracts. So I think what's happening with that number is that it's including all of the projects that contractor has had, because I saw some old contracts in there. And it's hard to tell, like, out of everything that's listed there, exactly what applies specifically to the Obamacare website. So I don't know that figure is entirely accurate. It's going to take some time to actually go line by line and look at how many of those items listed were actually directly tied to the Obamacare website. But I can say that there was a New York Times article that came out the other day that did cite something like an $88 million price tag to that particular contract. So that's probably more accurate. And I think if this is something I'm working on now, actually, if you were to take all of the different contractors that have been involved and add up the cost, you might still actually come up with a figure that is several hundred million dollars. I'm not going to throw away a high number entirely, but I think that's still yet to be determined.
Yeah. Well, Frank, what has always worried me, and we've done shows on this topic, is all the crony capitalism, and you know who exactly got these contracts, you know, like Solyndra and stuff like that. So I'm sure these are, you know, maybe the best and the brightest didn't exactly get the contracts.
I think you can be sure of that. Believe me. Because nobody in any respectable firm would put the name of their firm to something like this, which is so destined to fail. I mean, anybody who knew what they were doing would do what, as Mandy says, what you say, what I say. You would do a test of it. You would go over this again and again. You would make sure everything was ironed out before you launched it. And this obviously wasn't done. So once you put your firm's name on something like this, how are you ever going to recover?
Right. And in fact, in that CBS video that came out, or that story that was in the CBS
mm-hmm.
News, and I sent you that video, I hope you got it, but it's that video where they're actually interviewing.
I did.
Yeah, they were actually interviewing a gentleman, I think his name is Mr. Wang, who was actually a software consultant, and he said exactly what you said, Frank, that he'd be embarrassed to put something like this out in his name, which again brings me back to the managerial style, Frank, because I kind of get the feeling that when the White House told them this has to be ready by October 1st, 2013, that the order was sent out, and I just feel that memos were going up the organization saying, this is not going to be ready, this is not going to be ready, but it came right back down saying, it is going to be ready, and we go with whatever we have. That's
mm-hmm.
what I think happened, Frank.
Well, I think you're right, and I think that this is the greatest indication that it's a scam, is the fact that the Republicans literally were doing the biggest favor to Barack Obama and saying, you know, we'll give you what you want, but just delay it for a year. Well, okay, I'll delay it for a year. That would have given them time if they were interested in making it work. So the fact that they didn't take that deal, the fact that which would have pleased most Americans, because he gave the illegally, obviously, gave the delay to business, to some of the unions. He wouldn't give it to the individual mandate. So why is that? Especially if it wasn't ready, and that's what is bad about it. But if I might, I'd like to return to one thing you said, Silvio, and to exemplify that, and that's about the people who think that they've got, that this is all free. There's one thing that nobody is really talking much about, and it is the thing that makes this such a big, awful scam and such an awful thing for the people in this country who are poor or lower middle class and who may be buying insurance for the first time. And that's the concept of the deductibles. I'm sure when they say, you know, you can get insurance for, oh, just a couple of $100 a month. Well, wow, that sounds great, except for one thing. If you have a $5,000 deductible, you're never going to be able to meet that. And a
right.
lot of these people who have never bought insurance before have no idea what a deductible is.
Right, right. And some of those deductibles are pretty high from what I've seen. Mandy, any thoughts
mm-hmm.
on that?
Well, I wanted to back up a second and point out that there were reports, enough reports that have been out there now that some of the participating insurers were complaining weeks and months before this rolled out that the system had a lot of glitches. And, you know, keep in mind, these are the people that are having to fulfill the insurance policies on the other side. So they're you know, considered the end users. And they were making noise before this rolled out and saying this isn't ready, it's not working on our end. There were enough of them complaining that, you know, it went to several of the officials in the administration, and the answer was, in fact, exactly what Frank said. The answer that would come back down was, we're going live on October 1st. So, you know, this project has really been managed by deadline from the beginning is what I think has really happened. So what you're left with are this combination of insurers that are trying to fulfill enrollments on policies that they don't have the tools to support, because some of them are not even able to get the sign-ups on their end. They can't even get into there's a portion of the website that they have to log into in order to pull back the records of whoever has enrolled. Some of them can't even get to that area of the site. Their own accounts aren't working.
Right.
So
well,
if you read some
today.
Of the
Go ahead, Mandy.
Well, if you read some of the reports, you'll see some of them they're literally using, you know, pen and paper and taking people that are walking in and trying to just make a list of people to come back.
And I also heard something that they had lost the passwords that people had, like the people who enrolled, they lost the password. So you have
they
to call.
They reset them. Yeah.
Yeah. They have to call a call center, I guess, and give them your new password or something.
That happened to me.
Yeah. Well, then all of a sudden I'm thinking security problems. In my head, you know, I'm thinking, oh my God, security. You know, one something else too that I want to get into is this whole question of customer service, and Frank, that's an area you've had a lot of expertise in, and the whole idea of customer service. If a private company had put out a product like this, that company would be apologizing and saying, well, we're going to fix it, and the customer service, they would have extra customer service, making sure that the customers were satisfied. You don't have any of that here, Frank. It's like,
no.
You know, it's tough luck. You know, if you cannot enroll, that's your problem, not our problem. You know, that kind
you
of
know,
attitude.
This has all the hallmarks of a racket, to be honest with you.
That's right, yeah.
I mean, let's tell the truth. This is a confidence game. We're telling you one thing, you're going to be okay. Oh, I'll pat you on the back, and it's just wonderful. But what are you going to get out of it? You're not going to get anything out of it, and that's what's so disquieting about it. I mean, to the people who are in this conversation and to your listeners, they're obviously informed people, and they can make that judgment. But that's, again, what I say is so cruel about this, is that it's aimed at a level of society where these people, through no fault of their own, through lack of education, are going to be totally victimized.
Right. No, you're exactly right.
You can read some of that if you go to the Facebook page for healthcare.gov. I was going through there a few days ago, and keep in mind, I feel for these people because I'm one of those people who has needed health insurance desperately and has tried to buy it on my own and was no longer able to afford it, had to drop it. So I've gone for a couple of years without it now. And I know what it feels like, and I was looking at what some of these people who did successfully get through the system, only to find out that, you know, the quotes that were given to them were many hundreds of dollars a month, and they were finding that what they thought was going to be the case was absolutely not the case. They were very, very disappointed. There's a lot of disappointment expressed on that Facebook page.
Yeah, that's what I've heard, that there's a Facebook page, I have not seen it, but where people are just going like crazy, and they're posting their negative comments and so on. Now, another thing I wanted to ask you, Mandy, I know you've been following this quite closely. I saw a report from a newspaper in London saying that 51,000 people had actually signed up. Does that make any sense to you?
Well, it's possible if you look at the state exchanges. The thing is, we really can't get the numbers because most of this, even the state exchanges, have said that they can't get to the numbers. Again, it has to do with the problem where a lot of them cannot get to that area of the website. So they really don't have an accurate count on what the numbers are. It's certainly possible. I mean, there are a couple of the state exchanges who have actually done pretty well and said that they've got the glitches worked out, and since some of them, you know, built a lot of their own portion of their website, they didn't really have as much of the same challenges as everyone else did. So I mean, it's possible, but I don't really know how they would have accurate figures just yet.
Well, this particular report that I'm referencing is one of the papers in England. Apparently, had a source in whatever department is running this, and the source gave him this information that 51,000 people had enrolled or had signed up. But even if that's the case, let's assume 51,000. That's way below what they're going to need, because, you know, the same article said they're going to need 4 million people to sign up just to make this thing work.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, and actually, I wonder if that 51,000 number isn't the number of what they gave as the baseline testing expected, because I saw a number of 51,000 as what they 51,000 concurrent users was the baseline they gave as the number of users that could be on the system at the same time, that's what they gave to as the baseline for load testing. So that might actually be what that report is referring to, as opposed to 51,000 actual enrollees.
I think you're right, Mandy. And in fact, if I might paraphrase Bill Clinton, it all depends on what you mean by sign up.
That's right. I think there's going to be a lot of that. But the one thing, Frank, we're going to take a little break for a second right now. My friend Aaron Clary is going to be joining us, and then we'll come back in our second segment with Frank and Mandy. But one thing that I wanted to say, Frank, you were talking about expectations. One of the expectations that, or one of the things that has not been explained to young people, and then we'll pick this up after I talk to Aaron Clary, but one of the things that has not been explained correctly to young people is that they're going to end up paying a lot of money to support their parents and grandparents. I don't think young people, Frank and Mandy, understand that very well. And that's where I see a little bit of shock when they start seeing some of these premiums and saying, wait a minute, I used to pay a lot less before when I had a little policy from, you know, XYZ Life Insurance Company in Fort Worth or whatever. So I think that's going to be another one of the problems. We're going to take a little break, and we're going to hear from Aaron Clary and his book. And we'll come back after the break with Frank and Mandy. We're talking to Mandy Nagy, a contributor to Legal Insurrection, and our good friend Frank Burke, who's a contributor to The American Thinker. And we're talking about the problems of Obamacare tonight. We'll be right back. Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, and let's say hello to Aaron Clary up in Minnesota. How are you?
Doing good, Silvio. How are you?
Absolutely great. Well, did you sign up for Obamacare?
No, my premium shot up by about 60%, though. So I had a small catastrophic plan for myself, and I was paying about $117. Now it's going to be about $180, $190 a month.
Under Obamacare, you mean?
Yeah.
Or oh, wow. So you're a good example of what we were just talking about.
Yeah, I don't know why I'm running and abstaining from booze and cigars. I think I'm going to tear it up, and I'm going to go live it up here and get some bang for my buck.
Okay. Well, of course, you're the author of Captain Capitalism as well as a couple of books, and you're writing a new book, as I understand.
Correct. Got a new book coming out called Bachelor Pad Economics, and that one is slated for Thanksgiving, hopefully get in on that Christmas selling season. But that one's going to be like the financial advice Bible for young boys and girls, or men and women. And it's coming along pretty well.
And what when you mean financial advice, like saving and maybe buying Obamacare?
I'm trying to get around that, but it's basically the Bible. Ideally, I try to describe it as, if you picked up this book when you were 16, you'd be light years ahead of everybody else. So it's basically a roadmap for your entire financial planning life, if you decide to take the time to dedicate yourself to reading it and incorporating it in your life.
All right. Well, very good. So that's going to be available, you said, around Christmas time, or hopefully
yeah,
before
yeah,
that.
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit before, hopefully. But
this is going to be the first year too that my book will be available for the holidays. I'm hoping that we wanted to do it last year to put it out before the holidays, but it didn't quite work out. But I'm hoping that a few Cuban grandparents out there will buy the book for their grandsons and granddaughters. You know.
Yeah. No, I played it yesterday on my podcast, and I keep telling people that it is a great book for young boys and girls. Fourth, fifth grade who don't appreciate what they got and maybe need a little bit of unbrainwashing that the teachers might be giving them.
That's right. Well, say something about Captain Capitalism, your wonderful website.
Well, Captain Capitalism, that's my blog, kind of the flagship operation I have on my little online empire. So you could go there, and usually there's a daily dose of economics and ranting and yelling and screaming at the world. But then there's also a podcast I have called the Clary Podcast. You can find that there, too. And then there's the handful of books that I do have, which are Worthless, Enjoy the Decline, and Behind the Housing Crash. And all that is there, and we're a rough-and-tumble group of people, rough-and-tumble group of economists on the blog. But everybody enjoys each other's company and conversation.
And you can get everything at Amazon, both Kindle. You have a recorded version, too, of one of the books as well.
Correct. Worthless is also on audible.com.
All right, very good. All right, my friend Aaron, have a good evening, and we'll talk to you later.
See you, Silvio.
All right. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, and let's get back to Mandy and Frank. I was just curious, Frank, we were talking about young people paying higher premiums. Aaron is a younger man than at least the two of us, Frank. I'm not sure about Mandy, but he's younger than the two of us. We never like to bring up a lady's age because then she'll never come back.
No, he's probably younger.
Okay,
Mandy
you'll never
sounds
come
very young.
Yeah, but I kind of deduct her age based on that Barry Manilow song.
I'll give you a hint. I was born before the Barry Manilow song.
Oh, okay. Well, all right. I was thinking of that. But anyway, all right. So I'll lose that bet then if I make it, Mandy. But it's interesting because Aaron was saying that his premium went up, and I know he has an individual policy as a self-employed entrepreneur. But yet that's the problem that a lot of young people have not been mentally prepared for this thing that their premiums are going to go up to pay for their fathers and grandfathers, Frank. That's another challenge here.
Oh, well, let's look at something that's really ridiculous, and that's the fact that that you can stay on your parents' policy till you're 26. And then after that, you have to buy Obamacare, if you will. But take a look at the situation now. Take a look at the overall economy. What are the employment prospects for many young people? They're certainly not very good, not in the way things are today. And look at the amount of unemployment, real unemployment in this country, not just the concept of what the unemployment rate is, but add to that the number of people who, as they say, have become discouraged and stopped looking for work. Well, you've got a tremendous number of people, and a lot of them are young people.
Right.
And how are they supposed to find the money given that they may have parents who've taken care of them at 26 years of age or younger to go out and buy all this insurance to support grandpa?
Right. Well, and it's interesting because, we have three sons, and one of the three sons is still under our policy because he's a student at law school. But the other two, one is in the U.S. Army, and they have a policy, and the other one is employed by a company, and they have a policy. But I was always under the impression that when you graduated from school and went out on your own, that it was up to you now to get your policy, not to stay on your parents' policy. That there was a certain amount of self-reliance there and responsibility that you were teaching a young man or a young woman when they would go out and get their own policy. But the way this program is set up is like, you know, you stay with your parents, and then after that, I guess you're unemployed, and God only knows what you pay after that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and not to mention the fact that if you really look at it, when you and I were young, so to speak, you didn't worry about it. You got a good job. You went out and you got a job, and your employer had insurance. I remember the first job I had. I was making, I think, $85 a week, but I had Blue Cross Blue Shield, and that covered just about everything.
Wait, and that was, Mandy, let me bring you in, but that was almost assumed, you know, when you were looking for a job. I remember when I came out of college and I was looking at companies, that was one of the, you know, that was one of the talking points of the companies. Well, you know, we have a health insurance policy and we pick up your portion. And when you have a wife and kids someday, you know, you'll pay a small family portion. I mean, that was almost one of the talking points about getting a job. Obviously, all that's gone with Obamacare now, Mandy.
Well, yeah, I mean, that was actually a deciding factor for me when I was working in technology. It was a time when jobs were plentiful. God, remember those days. But, I mean, I had my choice of jobs, and honestly, it was the healthcare policies that would help me pick which of those jobs I wanted, because I would have several job offers. And, you know, I would typically go with the one that had the better healthcare plan, even if it was a little bit less money in salary, because the health insurance plan was more important to me. That was harder for me to get a hold of than, you know, making a couple extra $1,000 in a salary. So it was. It was a real competitive advantage, and I do see that disappearing to some extent, you know, once the Obamacare program's been in existence for a while. I think it's going to be harder to really lure people. And, of course, you know, a lot of the employers are dropping their plans altogether and just letting people default to the exchanges.
Right. And, in fact, you know, as a recruiter myself, when I'm talking to candidates, that's one of the questions that candidates will always ask you when you're talking to them about a new opportunity. One of the things they say is, you know, what's their benefit policy, and, you know, what's their health insurance. It's almost something that, you know, once the candidate is interested, is one of the things they want to learn more about is, you know, what are the benefits, and, you know, what will this company do for me, that kind of thing. And the benefits, obviously, that's all gone now. Well, let me here in the last few minutes that we have, I just wanted to bring it back to the computer problem for a second, Mandy. What exactly can they do now? I mean, the computers are down, as I understand. And, you know, I was watching Secretary Sybilis, I think that's
Sybilis.
How you pronounce it. Sybilis, okay. And she was saying, well, we're better today than we were yesterday, which was very comforting to hear that. But that was her answer, you know. Well, you know, we're better off today than we were yesterday. Well, yesterday they were closed. Today they were closed. I'm not exactly sure what that means. But what can they do now?
Well, what they've done so far is they did take the site down over the weekend, the federal site. They took down over the weekend, and they added capacity. So, in other words, what they did was they essentially added servers to handle additional load. But like I said earlier, that's actually not going to fix the problem, and we're finding that it hasn't fixed the problem. I am a case in point. I still cannot get an account working on the federal site. And the reason why it hasn't fixed the problem is because there are actual coding changes that need to be made on the front end as well. The biggest problem in the computer glitches is that what you've got are different components of code that have to talk to each other. And as those components try to talk to each other, it's causing additional burden on the system. The way that coding is done is not necessarily optimal. If you read through some of the actual technical details about what's wrong out there, you know, you'll see quotes about there being dozens and dozens of files that are opened up when you go to click on some of the action buttons on the site. So if you go to click on create an account or the apply button, it launches a series of files, and a lot of that puts additional burden on the system and opens it up to additional errors. So what they have to do is optimize the coding for that, some of which is known. You know, they've already identified where some of that needs to be optimized. But what they haven't gotten to yet, and what will still occur over, I think, probably months, is finding the additional problems in the system, the things that they haven't even gotten to yet, because so many people have not even gotten past the point of creating an account. I mean, if you take a step back and look at where we are in this, most of the people who have had problems with the system have not even gotten past that point. It's just the creation of an account, which you need to do before you can even look at any of the plans. So imagine what's going to happen down the road over the next few months as more people are finally able to create their accounts and then start getting into the process. You're going to have multiple people on the system doing all kinds of different things all at the same time, and that's where these unknowns are going to start to pop up, things that probably either weren't tested for or didn't come up in testing when they did whatever limited testing they did. So I think there's going to be, you know, months down the road where they're still going to be trying to identify the unknown errors that they haven't found yet. That's the hardest part of this entire thing.
Yeah, because all the unknown, it's unknown for a reason, I guess. But Frank, at what point do they simply say, well, you know, this is not going to work, let's shut it down for a year? That's one option. The other option is a lot of people won't come back for a second chance. You know, they'll say, man, I couldn't get in the first time. I mean, we're talking about young people here for the most part, and if my three sons are any example of this, you know, they get into computers and they expect it to work, and if it doesn't work, they're not going to come back, Frank.
No, they're not. And, you know, this is where I fear that they're going to say, well, something's wrong here, it's not our fault, but we have to go to single payer. I do have one other comment, though, and that's something that kind of gladdens my heart in a way, if you happen to see it in the Drudge Report. And it may be the problem solver on this, too. The giant complex that they have built in Utah for the NSA, which is supposed to be storing all our computer activity, our telephone calls, etc., apparently has been victimized by a series of fiery explosions.
Right. Yes.
And this is because they're asking it to handle so much, the electricity can't keep up with it, and the thing is going up in flames. Well, I can't think of a better fate for Obamacare.
Right, yeah, sure. But again, I go back to my earlier point when we started that this is the most ambitious public sector project probably in the history of the world. And
I don't know. I think the Tower of Babel might be something that's rough.
But that didn't end up real well, Frank, as I recall from Catholic school. That was, that was one story that didn't end up real well, as I recall the nuns telling us. They always used that story, didn't they? Didn't they use that story
to
point out that sometimes mankind was got overextended?
A little bit too proud, yes.
Right, but I just think that, you know, this is such an ambitious project that even if everything had worked, it was still so ambitious that maybe trying to do it in 3 years was never realistic in the first place.
No, it wasn't. Absolutely not. That's been my complaint from the beginning, is that I think the law was flawed from the start because there were deadlines written into the law. And then, of course, as soon as the law was passed, they immediately started passing regulations that set deadlines as well. I don't think any of that was realistic. And that's why I'm hesitant to blame everything so heavily on the contractors, because while the contractors bear a lot of responsibility, you can only blame them for whatever was passed off to them, whatever requirements were given to them, you know, whatever was conveyed to them. So ultimately, I really place most of the blame on the administration and the people who created the law, because I think they overextended themselves right from the start. And that's why I'm careful to put all the blame on the contractors, because I want people to understand the administration really bears responsibility here, and we have to remember that if it starts to get into the talk of single payer, because
right.
It's not just the contractors, it's the people who told the contractors what to do.
I think Mandy has brought up a really exquisite point here, and you see it again and again, and you see it in things like the windmills that are broken and that are not generating the power. All they're doing is killing eagles and endangered species. You see it in all of this idea that you're going to force technology before it's ready. The electric cars, the fiery Teslas, the whole blame thing. You cannot take technology and make it do more than it can do at any particular point in time. And anytime you do that, you're begging for failure, and you got it.
Well,
yeah, and
one
I think
more.
We have to remember, too, the electronic health records are also written into this law, and we haven't even gotten to that point yet. And there have been a lot of, you know, people in the medical industry that have been complaining, saying, yes, we need to get there. We definitely need to go in the direction of electronic medical records, but we're not ready yet. And I think the Obamacare system is a perfect example of what can happen when you try to rush this out too quickly.
Well, Mandy, do you promise me and the listeners that when you enroll and you have a successful enrollment that you'll come back and tell us about it?
Sure, if you can wait about 6 months.
Only
well,
6 months.
Yeah, we got plenty of time. But I was going to say one more thing. I mentioned that I was listening to the Mike Huckabee show earlier today, and he had some people calling in who were trying to enroll. And this gentleman called in, and he said that he thinks the problem with all the programming and the computers is that when you write something for the federal government, there are so many parts and so many different things that have to talk to each other that have never spoken to each other before. And he just thinks that this is just typical, this just a dysfunctional government trying to function. It just isn't, you know, it's like the turkey doesn't fly kind of thing, you know. It just isn't going to work.
There's definitely some truth to that, and there are additional elements to this that they haven't had to do before. Like, there are some pieces of the system that have to talk to the IRS, because they need to verify tax and income information and things like that. So, I mean, I won't go as far as to say that they're not used to this. The federal government does have systems that have to talk to multiple other components. They've done this before. But they've never really done this before. And like I said, a lot of what was dictated as part of the requirements was actually written into the law, and there are some quirky things in there. If you're one of the few maniacs like me who actually read pretty much every page of the bill, there are some weird things in there. And some of that is literally going to be legislated into the code writing. And so you've got all these different components that I think are new to people and were essentially dictated as part of the requirements. So it's not something that they're really used to.
Right. Well, hopefully they'll read the next law that they vote for.
Yes.
Because I think a lot of these people didn't. But let's just take a minute and talk about each of you. Frank, American Thinker, what's your next article?
Oh, that's a good question. I've got several topics that I'm looking at, but I think that one of them, the one that kind of tempts me most, has to do with projection. And that's a psychological term, but it's how Americans get into trouble, you know, how this country gets into trouble. We tend to think that go around the world. It was institutionalized by Kennedy in his American University speech that we all want the same things, a good education for our kids, you know, a widescreen TV, a good job, tickets to the NFL. Well, you know, we keep saying that and we keep acting like that all the world wants the same democracy that we have. And that's where we're getting into trouble. We're trying to project our values on tribal societies. We're trying to save a world that doesn't want to be saved and that, in effect, in many ways can't be because it's not where the people are.
That's right. And Mandy, what about legal insurrection? What are you working on?
I'll probably be doing some additional follow-ups on the Obamacare system. One of the things I want to look at is how much time they actually spent on the marketing and promotion versus actual planning for the site and testing and all that. So I'll probably do some follow-ups there, and additionally on you know, what the contractor involvement was. Hopefully, look at the costs.
And what about Professor Jacobson? Well, what is he saying about all of this?
He had a good piece up today, where he talked about, you know, that in the end, the administration really didn't care as much about what really went into the Obamacare system. They cared more about just the fact that it got out there, that it exists. You know, that
right.
that was more important to them. And I think it's a good piece to read because it's short and to the point, and I think really makes the point and hits home that all they really cared about was just getting this out there, and it's true.
Right. And
well,
one thing. Go ahead, Frank.
Comment from a managerial business standpoint, and that's the fact that if you had, and there have been, massive failures, especially with regard to computers, in certain industries, at a time like that, that's when the president of the company steps up and shows the leadership and says, look, here's what's happened. Here's what we're going to do. We're sorry for this. Here's how we'll make it up to you. And please bear with us, and we'll give it to you in the future. But the bottom line is there's no leadership here.
Right.
Yeah.
No, but that's a big problem, too, because if Americans, I mean, if someone was a leader and he said, look, we made these mistakes, we're working on them, but, you know, we're going to fix them, maybe the, you know, people wouldn't feel as negative as they are. But, I mean, are you confident that Obama has a clue of what's going on? I don't. I mean, you know, I don't have a clue. I mean, he's literally in the dark.
I think what he'll do, too, and this is something Professor Jacobson pointed out, and I've been complaining about the fact that I don't think the administration is being honest and upfront about just how bad the problems are. He's been spinning it as, oh, there's all these people coming to the site. This is a great problem to have. But in the end, they're not being honest about what the problems really are, and they probably never will be, because the point Professor Jacobson made was that there are going to be some stories out there that are success stories, and those will be the ones that the administration holds up instead, just like he's doing with the, you know, this is a great problem to have, all these people trying to sign up on the site, and that's why it's not working. It'll be the same thing. A couple months down the road, they'll hold up the few success stories and make it seem that that's the entire picture, when really there are going to be a lot of people who have had much bigger problems.
Right. That's a very good point. Well, Mandy, thank you very much for joining us tonight. And Frank, as always, it's a great honor. And we'll do another show, let's say, middle of April. And Mandy can tell us about her her new Obamacare policy.
I'm happy to come back before that.
Yeah, right. And but thank you
all
so much.
All I can say is, Mandy, stay healthy.
Yeah,
right, exactly.
That's right. Well, thank you so much to both of you for joining
sure.
us tonight. It's a great honor to have you.
Thank you,
and God bless.
You too.
All right. Well, normally on Thursday nights we're joined by Leslie Eastman, but she is, she had some scheduling conflicts this week, so she's not joining us on Thursday night. But I thought, as we always do on Thursday nights, that we play her song. So, Leslie, if you're listening, this is your theme song, The Sands of Egypt. So we're going to close our show tonight with a little song for Leslie, and looking forward to having Leslie back next week. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. Thank you so much for listening to our show tonight. We're going to continue several shows on Obamacare and some of these problems and the shutdown and all of that over the next few days. But that's it for tonight. Good night, everybody.